As a longtime educator, wellness instructor, and coach for women rebuilding after major life shifts, I deeply understand the challenges of reconnecting with your mind, body, and purpose so you can live grounded, confident, and whole. I'm Dr. Molly Kirby, your host, and welcome to Rooted Conversations by Reinnovate You Coaching, where your healing becomes your roots and your growth becomes your new way of being. Through grounding conversations, practical tools, and valuable insights, Rooted Conversations empowers you to reconnect with yourself, to release what no longer serves you, and to reinnovate the person you're becoming. If this sounds just like the thing you've been looking for, subscribe to the podcast and join me on this journey to reset, renew, and reinnovate you. Welcome back to Rooted Conversations. In this episode, I'm joined by Jamie Shapiro, the voice behind the podcast, Grandma Has ADHD. This is a powerful conversation about late diagnosed ADHD and why women are so often overlooked. We will also explore how ADHD shows up differently and what becomes possible when self-awareness replaces self-blame. If you've ever wondered why life felt a little harder than it should, then this episode is for you. So welcome, Jamie. Thank you for joining me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And I loved your introduction. The only thing I do want to say to correct is a lot of women are discovering that they likely have ADHD, but not everyone is getting diagnosed. So that's a whole conversation that we can also have.
Good. One of the things I like to do is always let the listener have a little information about you and why you decided to do this podcast, Grandma Has ADHD.
Okay. Well, you're in for a story then, because I like to talk.
We like stories.
Good, good, good. Okay, so I'll back up. 21 years ago, I was living in Florida, mom to a one-year-old and a three-year-old, working as a realtor, and discovered that I had cancer. I had to wait for pathology to come back, and I'm very lucky that it turned out that it was thyroid cancer. But when you are 34 facing a cancer diagnosis, it's an opportunity to reflect on your life. And I knew that I didn't want to be a realtor, but I didn't know what I wanted to do. I was very fortunate to be able to have a third child. I've been healthy for 21 years, you know, thankfully. And my ex-husband and I moved from Florida to California. And I actually started working at a cancer foundation when I discovered the senior move management industry. Have you ever heard of that before?
I have.
Good. Well, so only about 10% of people have even heard of it. The National Association of Senior Move Managers. They've since added the word and specialty because we do help people besides seniors, but they were hosting their national conference in San Diego. And I went to the conference and I was like, wow, this feels like what I want to be doing. This feels like it has purpose. And for any of your listeners who don't know what NASM or senior move management is, when someone has been in their home, you know, for many, many years, or they need to either go from a big home that they've lived in to a smaller one that's easier to maintain, or they want to move into a senior community, or they want to move to be closer to loved ones as they age. You know, normally when we're moving, we're going up in size. But When we are aging and we're needing to be in an easier to maintain home or right sizing, then we'll go to a smaller one. And then there are a lot of decisions that need to be made, which can be overwhelming. And then what do you do with all of your things? Also, physically moving is very challenging. So this industry, we're about to celebrate our 25th year coming up in 2027. And I'm super excited to tell you that I am the president-elect. So I'm especially passionate about our industry. But I started that business in about 2013-ish. I can't remember exactly because didn't get it right off the ground. But shortly after I started the business, my 15-year marriage ended. And my oldest child around the age of 14 came to me and said, Mom, I think I have ADHD. I said, and at the time, so my oldest child is non-binary and uses they, them pronouns. So I'm going to use those pronouns when we talk. But I said, you can't possibly have ADHD. You've been reading since you were 3 years old, because I thought of ADHD as my little brother who had to be put on Ritalin in the 1980s to be in the classroom. I couldn't even sit still to learn to read. No one had diagnosed me with ADHD. And I said, you can't possibly. So we go into the psychiatrist's office. And for ADHD, when they evaluate someone, they usually want to have another person there because we don't always remember our behaviors. And we need someone that's, you know, going to be able to be that third party objective person. And they also want to see that that behavior exists in different in different environments, not just in the classroom or not just at home. So the psychiatrist proceeds to ask a series of questions. And at the end of it, I looked at him and I said, I'm answering more yeses for me. Do I have it? Well, so we both walked out with an ADHD diagnosis. And truthfully, I had at that point just started my business. I'm now going through a divorce. I have three children. And my thoughts are, I graduated college with high honors. I've started two businesses. So what? I have ADHD. And it just went on the shelf. And truthfully, that was really the extent of it until about 8 years later when I was listening to a podcast, because I then was studying to become a member of the ICD, which is the Institute for Challenging Disorganization. Because when my company, so I'm in San Diego, my company is Silver Linings Transitions. And when we are not doing moves for our clients, we have downtime. And I'm like, how do I fill the space? So I decided to become a professional organizer. And then I discovered the ICD. They had an ADHD specialty. And I'm like, well, I may as well become an ADHD specialist since I have ADHD. But through the process of studying for that, I heard a podcast where they were talking about fibromyalgia and migraine headaches being very common in women with ADHD. And I called my mom and I said, hey, mom, I know I told everybody you have hoarding disorder because I used to do a lot of downsizing presentations. And a presentation I do pretty regularly is, do you own your stuff or does your stuff own you? And I would stand up in front of the room and say, I come from a family with hoarding disorder. Because if you had seen my mom's home, you would have seen stacks of stuff everywhere. Furniture that couldn't be used for its intended purposes because it was holding stuff. Rooms that couldn't be used. And I said, mom, I don't think you have hoarding disorder. I think you have ADHD. And she did. And she was almost 77 years old and nobody had caught it. And then I started looking at all of the clients who I'd worked with through the years who reminded me of my mom. And I'm like, what if she has had ADHD this whole time? They probably have it too. And that's the story behind it.
So is there any possibility that ADHD is hereditary?
They say that it's as heritable as height. It's a very, very strong connection in families. I've heard 70 to 80%, but I think that it's probably higher. There's so much we still don't know about ADHD because up until recently, it was just for little boys and they would outgrow it. And now we're realizing that's absolutely not the case.
So what are some signs that you may have ADHD and what might bring you to someone to say, hey, is this a possibility that I have ADHD? I'm an older adult. Maybe it's been overlooked.
Yes, absolutely. So again, we always think of the hyperactive little boy. And what we also don't realize is that hyperactivity might change over time and it might go from a hyperactive body to a brain that just doesn't stop. And that's a brain that's just constantly going. A lot of people with ADHD tend to struggle with anxiety. We ruminate and we catastrophize and we make mountains out of molehills. We tend to struggle with something called rejection sensitivity. So and here's a perfect way for me to explain it. I run a business and I get a phone call from somebody and they say, hey, Jamie, can you give me a call back? I immediately go to something bad has happened. They want to say something negative. I just assume the worst. So we tend to be really, really creative. We have a hard time with short-term memory. And so for instance, I will forget where I parked my car. I will forget where I put my keys. I will drop words in the middle of, a sentence. I'll be talking and all of a sudden I can't come up with what I was saying, or I just met you. You told me your name and I immediately forgot it, or somebody gives me directions and it's go left here and then go right here. I'm going to lose it. And it becomes worse, especially for women, but based on where our estrogen levels are, because estrogen is procognitive. So that's why we tend to see the two times that women get diagnosed most frequently are either when their child is diagnosed or when they begin perimenopause. And the reason that I decided to name the podcast Grandma Has ADHD is that I was able to determine that I had ADHD when my child was diagnosed, but my mother's child wasn't diagnosed. And, the older generation, the silent generation boomers, the Gen Xers, and boomers weren't diagnosed.
Yeah, that's very true. So what kind of stigmas are attached to having ADHD? Could that be a possibility of why, people are so hesitant maybe to explore the possibility they might have ADHD?
That is a great question. And up until recent, and first of all, the word attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, there's disorder. And also people assume, and actually I was sitting next to a man. So I was at a senior expo. This man was in his 1950s. He had written 15 books. He was, you know, at the table next to mine. He was emceeing the event. He was about to play pickleball. Not, keep in mind, he's in his 90s. He's going to be playing poker that weekend. Like, he was going, going, going. And I looked at him and I said, is there any chance you have ADHD? And he looks at me and he says, I don't have ADHD. I've written 15 books. My grandsons have ADHD. And I'm thinking, oh, buddy. Because when you are interested in something, you actually have the ability to hyperfocus on it. And so that's the misconception that we cannot focus. Not true at all. You can also see ADHD as perfectionism. Somebody that, because they're so concerned with making mistakes or their short-term memory, that they overcompensate. And you see a lot of that in schools, you know. But the reason that there is a stigma behind it is that, and I'm really glad to say that the younger generations are owning, you know, mental health. And I don't even like to use the word disorder. I think it's a brain difference. It's a brain wiring. It's the way that we see things. And we see things differently. We see solutions when other people, you know, kind of hit the wall and we're like, oh, how can we MacGyver this situation? So yes, there is stigma. And I think it's because it used to be called minimal brain function. And we used to think of the hyperactive little boy who would, you know, his desk was like right next to the teacher's, or he was constantly going to the principal's office. So that's why even when my ex-husband said to me before I was diagnosed, you have ADHD? I'm like, no, I don't, you know? So yeah, it is. And that's actually one of the reasons that I'm so passionate about the work that I'm doing, is to say, you know, we should celebrate the brains that we have. You know, a lot of people we're realizing are neurodiverse, and that can be autism spectrum. It can be dyslexia. It can be ADHD. It can be OCD, you know. So it isn't that there's anything disordered. It's just different.
Yeah, I totally agree. I teach a lot of kids that on campus at Western Kentucky University that are classified as neurodivergent. And I think people are becoming more comfortable with that diagnosis. And then we're also talking about what's normal to begin with. So what are you diverging from? Mm-hmm. What is the normal, mm-hmm, if you're diverging from that? So do girls and women present symptoms of ADHD different than boys and men do?
Classically, yes. And if you think about a boy and a man and how they show aggression, it says anger, where women internalize it. And so we tend to internalize our ADHD. And so women are big at masking. That's a term that we use in ADHD. It's like when everybody on the surface thinks that you've got it together, and then behind the surface, you're like paddling like that crazy duck. So yeah, women, we have masked for so long that a lot of people don't even recognize that they're masking, because they've just held it together so much. And because we tend to not that, and again, this is generalization, because you can, you know, while it has gender norms, it isn't always going to fall that way. I've met inattentive men who, you know, also were very similar to the way an inattentive woman would be, but I am actually combined type. So there's inattentive presentation. That's the person that can sit still. Maybe she's listening to class, but she's doodling. She tends to zone out. I know most of us with ADHD, we need a deadline. So if you just tell me something is due, I'm not going to really be able to get it done until there's like a clock ticking. Okay. Yeah. So I say a big head nod. And so inattentive and hyperactive. So I have both kinds of ADHD, but I wasn't the kid that was constantly having to be out of my seat, but I was talking too much. I was distracting the class. You see a lot of hair twirling with girls, or some sort of something that they're always doing. I have a cousin that actually is PhD, ADHD, and she does this like hand wringing thing, you know, so.
Yeah. Is part of it that women kind of multitask anyway, and we just think it's normal behavior? That you're trying to raise the kid, go to the job, do the laundry, make sure supper's ready, or dinner, whatever you call it, is ready, that you go to the grocery store, that you get all of those things. Do you think that we think maybe it's just normal behavior for us?
So what I have found for myself is that the more that I have to do, the more I'm able to get done. And so I think a lot of the reason that I had a third child was that I didn't like things to be slow. And so I am comfortable going from thing to thing to thing to thing. And so I don't do well just resting. And then we also tend to be achievers. And so we are like, I'm achieving this certification and I'm moving on to this certification. A lot of it is we have big time imposter syndrome. And so it's so funny because you meet these accomplished women and all of us are struggling. It's like, I hear my bio and I'm like, wow, that's me. But I don't feel like that's me. And that's also because when you have ADHD, you've internalized so much shame growing up. They say that we've received like 10,000, I've heard 10,000, 20,000 negative messages by the time we're 10. Like, why can't you get it together? Why are you always spacing out? Why are you so sensitive? I used to be called too much. Like, can you tone it down? Can you be less of who you are? Right. And so I do think that women struggle with ADHD. With my podcast, I interview a lot of people who were raised by ADHD parents. And what I'm finding is if the father had ADHD, it didn't seem to have the same impact because he was out earning money and that was his job. But the woman was the executive functioning of the household. And ADHD is a struggle with executive functioning. So we are the ones that are making sure the appointments are scheduled, the house is clean, you know, everybody's done their chores and, you know, all of that. So I think that that's why you also might see women struggling with it more. And then, you know, when we're growing up and we're masking, fine. But when you have other people that you have to care for, while you're running a business or working and running a household, I think it just, and then add some perimenopause to it at all. Just, it's like a house that's just going to tumble.
So what should someone do if they think that they might have ADHD? Where should they go? How would they seek someone's medical advice for that?
So that's a great and very challenging question. And the reality is, and I talk about this on my Grandma Has ADHD podcast, there are a lot of physicians who are treating older adults, and I'm just going to say 50 and over for older adults, that did not learn about ADHD. In fact, I had Dr. Michael Lenz on my podcast who said, and it was corroborated by a woman, Maggie Alexander, who wrote on medications called Shine with ADHD. The physicians aren't even aware that ADHD they don't even go in looking for it. So a lot of times they are treating anxiety and depression, which is actually undiagnosed ADHD, and they're giving them the wrong medication. So the first and most important thing you need to do is find a physician in your area or a psychiatrist who understands ADHD. And also there will be people who will say you can't take medication no, that isn't true. They're going to look at your other, you know, what else is going on, you know, if you have heart conditions before they're going to give you a stimulant medication. But it isn't true. There are people who can take medication, you know, depending on other things that are going on. And if you're not a candidate for medication, which you have to have a formal diagnosis to get medication, I take Wellbutrin, actually. Wellbutrin is an off-label ADHD medication. And I get that from my general practitioner. That seems to help my ADHD, and it kind of levels off my anxiety. And then you can find an ADHD coach in your area. And I would, again, look for somebody who specializes in aging and ADHD, because the challenges are different if you're raising children or if you are, you know, like I'm in the middle. So I have a mom, you know, who's retired and, you know, needs some help, and she has ADHD. And then I have, you know, ADHD children, and I'm caught in the middle of all of that.
That's a typical thing to hear from our generation. So what are some of the consequences of having ADHD?
Okay, I'm going to tell you another story. Well, first of all, sleep is huge. And I struggled with this myself. So we tend to, if we have 10 wonderful things that happen in a day, but one thing that's negative, we will ruminate and we will like catastrophize and we will be up and spinning. And so that does disrupt our sleep. And then relationships are huge. In fact, that's been, I think, the best part of diagnosing my mom with ADHD. We had a very strained relationship my entire life, starting from around the age of 4, when my mother was a single mom, would use me as a sounding board, would cry to me and express her emotions. And as a 4-year-old, I felt the burden of my mom's, all of her stuff. And so growing up, to me, it was just like, okay, that was another responsibility. And my mom and I, we battled. I mean, she always had clutter, and I always felt like I had to fix the problem. And then at one point, I write about this in my book, I was pregnant with my first child, and we were at a family wedding, and in front of everybody, and I'm horrified to say this, but I looked at her and I'm like, you're pathetic, because I was frustrated. And when I realized that my mom had untreated, undiagnosed ADHD, I realized that I was shaming my mom the same way that we shame children. And so it was an opportunity for us to completely transform our relationship, because when I realized that we might express our ADHD differently because it is a spectrum and it shows up differently for different people. I'm a high achieving ADHD, but there are a lot of people, my oldest child really struggles with it, where it's like an all or nothing and they're either go, 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 and they can achieve, or they are like this generation calls it bed rotting. Just, I can't function. I can't do anything. And so when I realized that, you know, we were both emotionally dysregulated, she was raised by an ADHD parent who was also, you know, not really giving her the right upbringing. So then that passes down. So you see that generational trauma. And so I think understanding the impact on relationships. And by the way, I think one of the biggest challenges for my ADHD is rejection sensitivity. So I, you know, my mom would take everything that I said and turn it around and make it like, you know, you don't love me or you don't, you know, whatever. And I'm like, you know, so it's just been transformative. So I think that that's probably one of the biggest reasons to discover and learn about ADHD. And I would also say one of my favorite things that I learned about when I was studying to become a certified senior advisor was gerotranscendence. Are you familiar with that?
That one I do not know.
Okay, so Eric Erickson was a famous sociologist. He had the 8 stages of life. Well, he and his wife got into their 80s. They realized that they had not, you know, defined enough of the stages. And so he found the term, he didn't coin it, but he just sort of adapted it to the 9th stage. And gerotranscendence is when you're looking at your life and you're kind of reflecting on it, you're making peace with the decisions that you've made, you're making peace with your relationships. And I think when you suddenly realize that you had ADHD that whole time, and maybe you weren't lazy, crazy, stupid, you know, maybe you just had a brain that was wired differently. And I think that when you have that understanding, it can transform, you know, that narrative of your life.
What are some coping mechanisms that you can use to deal with ADHD, especially when you get older?
Sure. So awareness is really important. If you can, proper sleep. And actually, this is a great time for me to plug my book. It's called This Explains So Much, Understanding Undiagnosed ADHD. And I talk about, you know, what ADHD, what are the coping mechanisms? You know, how do you get proper sleep when your brain is always racing? You know, first of all, one of the best things for me is I think of future Jamie now. So I now know that my short-term memory is really bad and I will usually go from thing to thing to thing. And I don't want to slow down to like write the reservations or the details of something in my calendar. But now I know that if I don't, I'm gonna make future Jamie's life harder. So now I will pause and say, no, I'm gonna pause and do this. If I do my laundry, I boil eggs on the stove, I set my timer so that I don't walk away and forget, because I've definitely done that. So that's huge. Exercise is really, really important for us. You know, I hate to say proper diet, but especially with people with ADHD, a lot of times they crave sugar because it gives us that dopamine hit. So it's like really getting control of your diet, proper sleep, exercise, awareness, mindfulness, you know, just like when you do start to feel anxious or spinning out of control, you know, doing some box breathing, you know, will help. But I just think the awareness has been so critical.
I think it does help us a lot if we can explain why we do what we do and our behaviors. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned your book. You gave a good plug for that. You want to tell us a little bit about your podcast and how we can find you?
Sure. So my podcast is called Grandma Has ADHD. You do not need to be a grandma to tune in or to be on the show. I'm not a grandma yet. But one of the things I'm really excited about that came actually after writing the book and starting the podcast. So I didn't share that I'm also an ADHD coach. And what I realized is the book, really, people with ADHD need community. We need to talk to other people who understand us, because I'm not too much in a room full of a bunch of people with ADHD. And so I'm actually starting something called the Sparkler Society. And you can find, that's going to be a membership-based community for people who are discovering ADHD later in life. And it's basically, my tagline is, let's get our shit together, together. And so it's like canceling the subscriptions that we don't want to slow down that we've been paying for months. And how do you stop paying? We call it the ADHD tax. And there's so many ways that when you have ADHD, you know, maybe you don't return something that you've purchased and now you're sitting on it and you didn't get to return it, or you're not using food in your refrigerator because we're very much out of sight, out of mind. And if we don't see it, we don't remember that we have it. And how do you stop? Like, I can't tell you how many times I've made a reservation and forgotten that I made the reservation and then had to pay for the last minute cancellation. So really, it's about a supportive community. The other two things I'm excited about, part of the community, are the worry circle. They say we should never worry alone. And so rather than ruminating by yourself, let's go on to the membership page and talk about what it is that we're worrying about with other people. And then we tend to be big crafters. So people with ADHD, we get super excited about a new thing. And then we do it for, 5 minutes, and then we lose interest and we move on to the next thing. And a lot of us have trails of unfinished crafts. So it's going to be, okay, what craft am I going to finish? Or what craft am I going to swap? So you can find all of that, my ADHD coaching. You can find links to my website, all things Jamie Shapiro at jamieshapiro.me. And that's JamieShapiro.me. So yeah.
Jamie, I really, really appreciate this. This has been an enlightening conversation today, to say the least. Anything else you'd like to add before we say goodbye?
No, I just appreciate the opportunity to get the word out. And I just say that if anything resonated with you, don't put your head in the sand. Just learn about it, because when you learn about it, you can accept all parts of yourself. And I truly believe that we were born to be who we are, given the brain that we were given to do something with it. And so, I love Dr. Ned Halliwell, who's a big in the space, one of the first people to really start talking about ADHD. He said that having ADHD is like having a Ferrari brain and bicycle brakes. So just learning to craft the engine. And if the message resonated with you, I'd love to have you on my podcast.
I've resonated a lot.
I saw
that
it.
That probably was a possibility. We could probably do that pretty quickly. Maybe I should make an appointment with my doctor. Again, thank you so much for joining us. And for our listeners out there, stay rooted, stay connected, and until next time.
Thank you for joining Rooted Conversations by Reinnovate You Coaching, and for seeking clarity and truth in your health and wellness journey. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe, share, and leave a review. It helps us grow and reach more listeners like you. For resources and updates, follow us on social media or visit riucoaching.com. Until next time, stay grounded, stay curious, and keep growing. As a reminder, this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only and is not intended to be medical advice. I am not a medical provider. I am a PhD, not an MD. And nothing in these conversations should be used to diagnose, treat, or replace care from a qualified healthcare professional. Always consult your doctor or trusted healthcare provider regarding any questions or concerns about your health.